Well, hello there, my beautiful souls. Yes, it's me, Sandy Joy Weston. I can't believe I've been podcasting for over 16 years, and my agent realized I keep forgetting to tell you something super important. Yes, besides being a podcast host and an author, I am also a keynote speaker. What? I bring big energy, powerful shifts, and inspiration to audiences all over. How could I not tell you this? So if you're planning something fabulous and you want your crowd to shine bright and have a blast, head over to my sandyjoyweston.com website and check out my speaker page. I would love for you to refer me, recommend me. I would love for you to be in my audience. So let's make some pure joy together. I really appreciate it. Toodles.
This is Let's Keep It Real with Sandy Joy Weston, your weekly dose of positivity with awesome stories and guests from all over the world. It's an opportunity to learn some great new things and expand your mind. We'll tackle topics from all areas of life, and as always with Sandy, the sky's the limit.
Hello, hello, my Let's Keep It Real people. And let me just start up by saying thank you. Thank you so much for all your support. I've asked you to send in questions for my guests. And I said, you really need to, you know, up your game. I wasn't getting a lot of questions for the last few months. And all of a sudden I got flooded. And now Bob probably can't get them all. But that's all right, because I'm sure you can reach them out to him. Bob, how are you?
I'm doing real great. And, you know, is it okay? I want to say thank you to you, Sandy. I mean, it takes a lot of work to put together a podcast and to give a platform for folks who want to share something with other folks. And it's just an act of love. So thank you for what you do.
Well, you know, I was just talking to another young lady before this, who she also hosts podcasts. And we were talking about the original reason we got into it is not even the same reason we stay in it, because we meet so many wonderful, amazing people. And every single time I hear something, I'm like, oh, my God, I didn't think of it that way. I didn't know that. And I've been doing it for like 17 years since it's been called radio. And I still get on and go, oh, my God. So we're going to jump right into it, Bob.
Okay.
Here we go. Bob Martin's remarkable journey spans from being a high-powered criminal trial lawyer during Miami's, which I don't think I've ever had a guess with this, infamous cocaine cowboy era, to a mindfulness coordinator, certified meditation mentor, and published author. At 74, Bob draws from his extensive experiences. Oh, my God. I just can't believe you made the leap from that. Criminal lawyer, restaurant owner, corporate consultant, and community leader to help others discover clarity, resilience, and peace. Currently a professor of wellness and mindfulness coordinator at, we were just talking about that, Elon University. Bob integrates Taoist teaching, brain science, you know, I love that, and psychology into practical lessons for breaking free from limiting beliefs. His story of transformation offers powerful insights into a, oh my goodness, living a meaningful life. All right, we're going to jump into it, Bob. You get to pick one word that best describes your past 30 days, whatever pops into your head, and then tell us why you picked that word. Doesn't matter what it is.
Heartbreak.
Oh.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. I haven't had that in a while. All right.
There's the political situation.
Oh. So tell us more.
Well, you know, so yeah, I was a trial lawyer, 40 years as a trial
Long
lawyer.
Time.
And I saw that as being a servant to Lady Liberty. That I was in service to justice for 40 years. And you develop a certain ethic about what's right and what's wrong and the rule of law and what people need to do to act civilized and kind with each other. And then all of a sudden, you see all of those institutions which supported that slowly being dismantled. And it breaks your heart.
So, you know, it's so funny that you're not funny that you mentioned this, but I had a guest on and she was saying, listen, without really diving into it, it just were, she said there was like two nights I was so angry and so upset, I just didn't sleep, right? Mm-hmm. And then she shifted gears and said, okay, now what? So what can I do to make a difference? And what can I do so that I feel like I'm making an impact, because I can't just stay up nights worrying about it? And she ended up forming a book club where she's highlighting books with different opinions and different backgrounds that you may never have ever thought about reading. And all of a sudden, she had to close out the book club because so many people were interested. And she's back to sleeping mode now. So now that you opened that can of worms, what do you do about it? Like, how do you sleep at night, you know, to feel like, okay, I'm making a difference? And because I know the heartache and I know what you must be feeling. So now what?
Well, you know, I always keep in mind the comment, you know, you can't heal the world, but you can heal your little corner of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, the effect that I may have, I mean, I am enheartened by the fact that, you know, in cities all around the country, people are raising their voices and saying, we are heartbroken too. I know that I'm not alone.
Yeah.
But I'm fortunate that I write and I write and I post and I publish and I teach. So I have access, you know, to, I have a platform, that I can reach out to. So I personally don't feel helpless, although many of my friends.
Yeah. You know, yeah. I get that.
Do. I mean, I'm 75, so a lot of my friends are retired and, you know, and the like, and they're upset and they, you know, haven't been engaged in doing very much in their retirement. And there is a feeling of helplessness, but I see that people are beginning to ask that question, what can I do? And I guess, I think that's where you start. You start asking the question, what can I do? And remember, it's not about healing the world. It's just healing your little corner of it.
You know, my son, he's a sophomore at college and he's very much involved in community and giving back. And of course, him and his friends were devastated, but I see him doing little things every day, even at his school, he goes to Tyler Art, to make a difference in even the other kids' lives. And we were talking like, Cole, I want to do more. What should I do? He goes, well, Mom, there's tons of things you can do, but let's start with, what do you enjoy doing? Because there's so many things out there. Don't do something because I feel like I have to. And I'm like, duh, that's my kid. What is it you enjoy doing? And then there'll be so many ways for you to help and give back.
You know, Sandy, you touch on something that has been very current in my thinking. And it's this, that if you look at the teachings of Lao Tzu and Confucius and the Buddha and Jesus and the like, we all have this idea that they came to make us better people and to make the world a better place. And I think that we may be, I don't know if mistaken is the word, but we may have a different angle on it, or I think that I have a different angle on it. It's not that they came to make me a better person. They came because they want me to be happy.
Mm.
And it just so happens that if I don't practice betrayal against my friends, I tend to be more happy. If I am generous, I tend to be more happy. If I'm greedy, I tend to be less happy. If I am kind, I tend to be more happy. If I'm mean, I tend to be less happy. So they were just saying, all we do is want you to be happy. Now, coincidentally, in order to get there, you wind up being a better person. Yeah. And in order to get there, you wind up having a better world. But all we really want is be happy.
I remember years ago, someone's like, Sandy, you do so much for other people. You're such a selfless person, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm very selfish. When I do that, I feel so much joy inside.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. All right. So let's talk about your teachings at school. Yeah, I want to dive into that because we haven't had anyone recently with your I don't know if we ever had anyone with your background who's teaching what you're teaching. So tell me what it's like at the university right now. How are the kids reacting to your teachings?
Two questions there. What's it like at the university? What's really great at the university is that there is a new initiative that's just beginning to get traction called HEU, Health Education Universities.
Ah.
And it is not a separate university. It is an initiative inside of our university. And all over campus, we're seeing HEU. And it's about wellness. It's about wellness on a physical level, a financial level, a spiritual level, and a psychological level. We want the kids not to come out of there all kinds of stress type A's, looking for success, and when am I going to get my first yacht? We want them to be well.
I love that.
And it's an initiative now that my university has engaged in, and there's a number of other universities, and I'm really happy to see that because all we really want is for you to be happy.
Yeah.
So that's what's happened in the university. And within that, you know, they allowed me to actually have a 2-credit meditation course where I don't have to pretend I'm teaching mindful leadership or put it into some kind of like, what is the history of meditation? I get to teach meditation. And
you don't have to sugarcoat it. This is what it is.
I get to actually teach the skill. And the way that I teach it both on campus and in my private practice and to CEOs, and I also teach a lot of kids out of the foster and juvenile justice systems, pro bono. And those kids, I tell you, those kids take to it the easiest. But anyway, the way that I teach it is that there is an app that's associated with it, and the app has the guided meditations. They listen to it, and then they write a little reflection. Like they might write, oh, this was a terrible meditation. There was a dog barking throughout the whole thing. And every time I thought I was going to meditate, I couldn't meditate because all I could do was get pissed off at the dog. And then all of a sudden the gong rang and it was over. It was terrible. And now they write that. Okay. And that comes to my dashboard every single morning, in the class. And I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and I get my 15 logs and I respond to them. Sometimes it's just good job. You got this. But sometimes it's, whoa, you're saying that was a terrible meditation. Look at all the stuff you noticed. You noticed that the dog was barking. You noticed that you attempted not to notice that the dog was barking and that you were not able to not notice, which is a great thing because brain science teaches us that you cannot reduce stress. You can only counterbalance it. You can't not stress.
That's a big one. Hold on. my peeps have told me I try to get too much in. They want me to recap. So I got the, we're meant to be happy. We're not meant to be better people.
Right.
Being happy, you end up being a better person. So that's a big takeaway.
Let's stay with that one. Okay. You can't.
Now, number two.
You can't reduce stress. You can only counterbalance it.
All right, you got to dive in because that's a big one.
Okay. So most people say, I'm stressed and I don't want to be stressed and I want to de-stress. That's our mostly common reaction.
Right.
Brain science says that we can't do that. Okay. I mean, and the reason they can say we can't do it is because stress is identifiable in photographs of the electrical activity in the right prefrontal cortex of your brain. So I'm just saying there's a scientific way for them to be able to say that you can't do that.
Yeah, they can see it. Yeah,
they can see it. They can see it. What you can do is you counterbalance it by rest, relaxation, beauty, awe, insight, storytelling, things like that. In other words, by activating your left prefrontal, your rest and digest system, by activating that, you balance the energy.
Okay. But isn't that reducing it? I get it. But by counterbalancing it and doing all that awesome stuff, doesn't that reduce the stress?
It is the imbalance that gives you the sensation of discomfort.
Okay.
So you think you have levels of stress, but it's not really supported by the evidence. It's a perception of where you put your, in other words, so what does stress feel like?
It feels like you're not in control.
Okay, but that isn't a physical sensation. What is the physical sensation of stress?
I feel tightness.
Okay, so that's a physical sensation.
Yeah.
Okay, where do you feel the tightness?
Throughout my body, like mostly in my neck. If I feel stressed, first thing it's going to do is I feel tightness in my neck.
In your neck, okay. And okay, now that you have identified, this is what we do, you know, in meditation is we identify emotions as a combination of a physical sensation and a thought.
Okay.
So now that you've identified it as a physical sensation of tightness in your chest, can you handle that physical sensation? Is it so painful that you can't handle it?
No.
Okay. So that's all that is. That's all it is, right?
Okay.
Now you have some thoughts about, I'm not going to be able to do this. I can't make this deadline.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do this. Now, in meditation, we learn that we're not our thoughts. We have thoughts, but we're not our thoughts, right?
Right.
So when we become skillful in understanding that we have thoughts and that we're not our thoughts, then even those thoughts of stress become just things that we have. That's all they are. They're just thoughts. So now you have things that are just thoughts, and you have a physical sensation that is uncomfortable, but you can handle.
Okay.
So now why is that such a big thing?
Okay. So
because up until this moment, it has combined together and we have a paradigm that this is terrible. And then we have these thoughts of catastrophizing the future and I'm going to be out of control and all these bad things are going to happen and blah, 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 which are also, you know, simply thoughts. But going back to the idea that stress itself, you know, has levels, not really. It is just stress, which is a physical sensation and an emotion. So if I can now experience a beautiful sunset,
mm-hmm,
and kind of lose myself in that for a moment, or if I can reflect on that wonderful time when my kid hit a triple, or I can reflect on this incident and that incident, something that fills up that left side of the brain, I'm not thinking about the thought. And probably the physical sensation won't be so uncomfortable.
Okay. So, and I don't want to simplify it.
Okay.
It's a lot to break down, but I remember years ago, I was fortunate enough that one of my health clubs was right near University of Pennsylvania and Dr. Marty Seligman, positive psychologist, right there. I mean, few blocks from my gym. And one of the professors that worked under him, she helped me with one of my journal books on how to create this journal book, whatever. But I remember them saying, and this was years ago, the same thing. She would be like, it's the apple and the pear. if I tell you not to, you know, think of the pear, you're just going to keep thinking of the pear. So you have to replace it with the apple, and you can't have that two thoughts at the same time. And then she broke it into, if you're fearful and you're scared, then the only thing you do is you shift gears to think about things that relax you. Is that sort of what we're talking about? The apple and the pear, or is it totally different?
The idea of shifting intentionally to think about something else for the purpose of not thinking about one thing is a little tricky, because what you're really doing there is trying not to think about something. And I think your brain's going to play a trick on, it's going to make you think about that which you don't want to think about.
Which is why she said you got to think about the pear.
Right. Now- Right. But I mean, if I got the apple and the pear and I say I'm going to not think about apple by thinking about the pear, my brain is smart enough to know that I'm only thinking about the pear so that I don't have to think about the apple.
Damn brain.
It's smart enough to do that. And it's probably going to swing back to the apple. But if I go out and get a pear, and I start smelling the pear, and I start eating the pear, I'm not going to be thinking about the apple.
So you're saying bring in more of the senses.
The experience. Bring in the experience of it. Thinking about something is not being it. It's imagining it in the future. Let me give you a real-life example here, okay?
That'd be awesome.
Okay. So I'm in class, and I get 15 students. And they all, it's all elective, of course. It's an elective class. And they all take it because most of them identify as perfectionists or overthinkers or stressed out or blah, blah. So they know the benefit is what they expect out of the class is that they're going to learn to be able to modify that thing that's bothering them. So, I notice, like I mentioned, the way that I teach is we meet once a week, but they practice every day on their app and they log and I get their log and I return. And so we have a conversation with all 15 of them every single day. I'm talking in contact with them every day.
Yeah.
So I see one of them is not logging. You know, we're about the second week now. Everybody else has given me about 10 logs and she's given me 2 or 3. So I asked her to stay after class, and I said to her, so what's going on? I'm not being critical. I mean,
yeah,
she can log or not log. It's not a graded class. I mean, I'm just saying, you know, you took it because you wanted the benefit, and I'm sure you're smart enough to know that you can't go to a gym and just look at the machines. You got to get on them. You know, you got, I'm sure you know that. So she says, yeah, you know, it's a funny thing. I always seem to know what I need to do, but I never seem to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I said, oh, that's interesting. So so what are the thoughts that come into your head that are related to that? Well, you know, they're thoughts like this or like that. Now, I am a therapist, but I'm not there as a therapist. I'm there as a meditation teacher.
Yeah.
So I'm using meditation tools. So I'm saying, don't tell me what the thoughts are like. Tell me what the words are that you're using. Oh, it took her a little while, but she started to identify the words. Okay, great. And then she goes, well, it's not that. It always seems that I'm always sabotaging myself. So, mm-hmm. Well, what words are you using for that? And how does that feel? All of a sudden the dam breaks open, tears start coming out, sobbing heefully. I mean, and I just don't think that I deserve to be happy. Okay. Again, it's hard for me.
Sounds like therapy to me.
Yeah, it really does. But then I'm thinking to myself, you're not a therapist, you're a meditation teacher. Keep on that side of the road. So I said, I see that you're in pain. You're suffering. I see that. Where are you feeling it? Well, it's in my eyes and it's in my head. No. I want you to tell me where in your body you're feeling it. And, you know, she resisted and resisted. But finally, you know, when she calmed down a little bit, she was able to identify, this is really weird, she's able to identify a spot that was like 3 inches under her left collarbone.
Wow.
She said, that's where I feel it. It feels like it's throbbing there, and it feels like it's swollen, but it's not throbbing, but it feels like it should be throbbing. And then she went on with these detailed explanations of what she was feeling there. And then I asked her, did you notice you're not crying? Oh, so we figured out, oh, so now she was in the present moment, feeling a sensation that was current and present right now. And she realized that there was nothing in the present moment that required her to be afraid. It was only her thoughts of whatever happened to her in the past that caused her to feel she doesn't deserve to be happy, and her projection into the future of how her life was going to be. But it had nothing to do with the present moment. And then we started to identify that emotions are nothing more than a physical sense. Because if I said to you, Sandy, I love you, but I don't have a sense of yearning in my chest, I don't have a physical sensation associated with that, it's just an academic exercise.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if I have the physical sensation, but I don't have the thought, I probably would think I had indigestion.
Yeah.
Right? So it's the combination of a physical sensation with the thought that causes you to think you have an emotion. And when you can deconstruct that, you can manage your emotion more skillfully, which is what I did for her. I helped her break it down. I helped her to break it down. And then the reflection that I got from her at the end of the course was she said that she has not had that thought for the remainder of the course, and she was going to carry that into the rest of her life.
And did she log on?
Oh, from that point on, she logged on every day.
That's awesome.
So that's the power.
Yeah. And how grateful is she that you were there for her? Like, there's something you just, somebody just said that to me the other day, like, they're a therapist who's also a coach, who's also a professor. But no matter how much she studied, there's things she couldn't see within herself. And I feel like everybody needs help from the outside. There's just things that you just can't work out on your own.
So, yes, that's why you need a coach. You know, I mean, you learn yoga from watching YouTubes and reading books. You can, and there are apps, and there are journals and logs where you can track your progress, and there's all kinds of things that you can do. But none of that can tell you to move your elbow 2 inches to the left.
No, exactly. I'll tell you what, some of my favorite coaches, and therapists that I know that are friends and colleagues, they all have therapists or coaches, every single one of them.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that. Constantly growing, constantly learning. All right. So I want to back up a second here because I really want to make sure that we got the happy part, but I really want to make sure that they have concrete things they can do for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we get that it'd be great with a coach about here they are, feeling stress, and you want to counterbalance it. So let's give a real life example. How about we bring in one of the questions now?
And then, okay, sure.
And then it'll help.
Sure.
So this person, actually, this young man, is a senior in college. And we'll call him Billy Bob. And Billy Bob gets overwhelmed because he's not sure what he's going to do with his degree. And did he pick the right degree? And he doesn't want to, you know, disappoint anyone. Billy Bob says he was good for the first 2 years. But then by the third year, it started building up. Like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And now he's here with his fourth year. And he's stressed to the max. He's tried everything and he knows he is not his thoughts. What's a suggestion when he really starts spinning out of control of what he's going to do with his future? Please ask Bob for help.
Wow.
Bob's thinking.
So if the first place I would need to go is let's take a look at exactly what the words are that he's using in his mind, the words that are flowing through his mind. Exactly what are those words? And then what are the physical sensations that he's feeling?
Okay.
Because overwhelm, you know, we have become so disconnected from our bodies that we have no idea how these emotions are manifesting in them.
I gotcha.
You know, I mean, I used to weigh 315 pounds and I couldn't do anything with it until I learned that the thought I'm hungry is just a thought. And that if I can just wait 5 seconds, it's going to go away. Somebody else just wrote a great book called The Countdown Method. And she says, whenever you have a thought, you know, you open up the refrigerator. Should I have cheese or do I want grapes and then just count down from five, four, three. And then by the time you get there, you know, you can close the refrigerator door.
So true.
Because we're so disconnected, we don't know when we're hungry, when we're not hungry. But anyway, there are physical sensations that he's feeling. And it's really important for him to ask himself the questions, where in my body am I feeling those sensations? What are those sensations? Where are they? And then also, what are the words that I'm using?
Okay.
I mean, you have to start there. I mean, there's all kinds of things that I can say, you know, about you're catastrophizing about the future and it hasn't come yet and come to the present moment. All that doesn't mean anything to anybody in that state. It's a physical state.
Yeah.
And we have to deal with it physically to start. Once we can get to a place where it's a little calm, then you might be able to understand that that everything that's happening to him has nothing to do. If I can get a little bit, I'm not going to say spiritual, but a little bit woo-woo.
Just go. It's okay. My peeps are used to it.
Okay. There is our authentic there is an authentic self that we have that inherently knows what's good and what's right. And then there's all of the conditioning that's been placed upon it. Everything that he's feeling is a product of somebody else's thought, of somebody else's thought that has been imposed upon him. It has nothing to do with his authentic self. But I mean, that doesn't help. That's not going to help him right now because the conditioning has been ingrained into his thinking such that it has been accepted as my own. But if we can start to consider the fact, even just consider the fact that this is conditioning and it's not the product of my authentic self, if we could just consider that, allow for that possibility. That what I'm thinking and what I'm feeling has no basis in any kind of reality. It's just the conditioning that has been imposed upon me. It might open up a little space.
Yeah.
And then if you can like revisit that little space again and again, mm-hmm. it might grow.
I like that. Okay. So then let's make sure that we're clear on if someone says, oh, I have too much stress in my life, I want to reduce it. You're saying it, you can't reduce it. You just can counterbalance it.
Right. You have to cultivate and curate your environment.
Okay. What about, because lately you've been hearing so much about it, is it the same thing when people say, I just have so much anxiety, I don't even know how to control it anymore?
Mm, So, you know, the thing about stress is that we have to have stress in our life. If we don't have stress in our life, we won't do anything.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, a certain level of stress is required.
Yeah.
I have some assignments that I need to do, and they are stressing me out because I know I need to do them. But I want to go downstairs and I want to lay in the bed and I want to watch TV right now.
Yeah.
Without the stress, I won't do what I need to do.
Yep.
No. So you need that in your life, you know, to get you up out of bed and get you going. So that's okay. Overwhelm is what we don't want.
Right.
Right. So what was, I'm sorry, go back to the question.
No, that's okay. So it's about anxiety because
I think that, you know, one of the things that I think is helpful is to have a little understanding of who we are as human beings and what's acting on us and why we're acting the way we're acting, because we have a tendency to think it's about me. It's me. There's something wrong with me.
Yes, absolutely.
So we have to remember that we are creatures. We are creatures that evolved in an environment that is very different than the environment we're living in.
Okay.
We spent 1.7 million generations as hunter-gatherers. We have only had agriculture for 500 generations. We are the creature that evolved for a life that is constantly being threatened with real dangers like snakes and thorns and poisons and tigers.
Yeah.
And we have to go out and find our food and do a lot of physical work every day. We understand this in a way because a lot of us go to gyms because we know we're not getting enough exercise.
Yeah.
And we try to make up for the fact that our bodies need exercise by going to a gym to getting exercise. We also lived in a world where during the day we worked hard and gathered berries and gathered whatever we needed to do, very physically demanding. Dangers were identifiable. And when it came to the night, we connected with our tribe and we relaxed and we became creative and told stories. So that was the kind of routine of life that we had, which we do not have today. When the danger is a snake, I know what to do. If it's a tiger, I know I run. If it's a snake, I get away from it. If it's poison food, I don't eat it. I can identify it. It's clear. When the dangers are deadlines, missed buses, cars that break down, an engine light that goes on that I don't know what it means, an app that I have to like start up and I can't figure out why it won't connect to my internet. When these are the kinds of unidentified dangers that exist, it's kind of a chaotic gray mass of stuff out there that is not identifiable and solvable right away. It is creating in me physically the same reaction. Cortisol is dropping into my body. Adrenaline is coming into my body. I'm getting stressed. I'm having the same physical reaction as if there was a snake in front of me.
Yeah.
But I can't identify it and I can't solve it. So we have to recognize that those feelings that we're having are evolutionary holdovers from a time when it made sense and that they're going to be there and that the only thing that we can do is learn to curate our environment. We have to recognize that I've got 40 things on my to-do list and I'm not going to get them all done. And when I die, my inbox is not going to be empty. You just got to accept it. I mean, if it was a snake, I know what to do with it. With a deadline, you know, with a to-do list that I can't handle. I can't. And at the same time, I have to take the time to connect. The other part of our brain, that left side of our brain, you know, from positive psychology, when we rest and our brain relaxes, we see the world more broadly. Our peripheral vision literally increases. We literally see the world more broadly. We get creative ideas, things that we couldn't connect before, we can connect. Our sense of wanting to be with people, to open ourselves, to open our heart is there. That's a vital part of our living. We have to take the time to generate an environment that feeds that. And that's what I mean by balancing it.
Yeah, I gotcha.
You know,
seeing it, Bob.
If you have enough beauty in your life, stress will not be an issue.
Yeah. So I want to make sure we get this in because I know we're going to run out of time. And I know I'm going to get flooded with this. So meditation, we got question after question of, does it matter what type of meditation?
Yes. No, because it depends on what you... Because it depends on what your goal is.
Okay.
If your goal is to transcend to another state of consciousness, then you need to do transcendental meditation and do mantras and stuff like that. If your goal is to empty your mind, well, that's not meditation, that's relaxation, which is vital and important, but you should listen to sweet music and read a book and watch a mindless war movie or whatever it is, you know, that causes your mind to go blank.
I gotcha.
But if it is your goal to build up the neural pathways in your brain that make it easier for you to be generous, kind, loving, and to create the kind of person that you imagine that you want to be, then there are certain kinds of meditations that you need to practice to do that. And that's the kind of meditation that I teach, which is just brain awareness, insight meditation is what that is. So it does, yeah, it does matter.
Does it matter how long? Sorry.
I think, you know, they often say about learning a guitar, you can learn 3 chords on a guitar and play 40 songs inside a half hour. And you can spend your life perfecting it. Meditation's kind of like that. You can learn meditation that gives you benefits and makes a huge difference in your life in a very short period of time. And you can spend your life perfecting it. So, you know, it's an ongoing lifelong thing. But my students generally, it's about the 5th or 6th or 7th day when they go, oh, now I see what you're saying. They had the experience of the teaching. So, no, it doesn't take a long time. 10 minutes a day, a week or two.
I was going to say, if they are getting it after 5 or 6, that's huge. That's quick.
Yeah. No, it is quick because it's not complicated. Look, Sandy, haven't you had a conversation? And even as you're having the conversation, there's a thought in your head like, oh, this isn't going very well. Or, oh, I was really brilliant. Or even when you're telling a joke, you're thinking about what you're going to say next, and then you're thinking about how the tagline's going to go, you know. So that part of your brain that's commenting on your conversation, that is meditation. You're already meditating there. All we do in meditation is help you be able to comment on what you're doing intentionally, instead of it happening just because it happens. When you're having your conversation, you're thinking this isn't going so well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're gaining a little wisdom there because look at what's happening. You're watching what you're doing. You're seeing the reaction of the other person. You're evaluating all of that data. And you're teaching yourself that probably the next time I'm going to do it a little differently, which means that you're becoming more skillful in life. And that's what you're, and that's what meditation is. The only thing that we do in meditation is teach you to be able to do that more often and intentionally so that you gain the wisdom more quickly.
Okay. So hold on, hold on.
Ooh.
Let's right now, because I've had so many different interpretations of this.
Okay.
What is your definition of meditation then?
Meditation is the process of learning to become a skillful thinker.
Never heard that before. I like that.
It's skillful. It's just becoming more skillful. I want to go out and learn how to play tennis. Okay, this is how you do a forehand. It ain't no big deal. I want to be able to manage my thinking more skillfully. Okay, well, then we have to, like, see.
Then what's the difference between that and mindfulness?
Well, it's kind of like the difference between a boat and a ship. You can put a boat on a ship, but you can't put a ship on a boat.
I like that analogy.
Yeah. All meditation is mindfulness, but not all mindfulness is meditation.
I like that.
If I was going to make my bed mindful, if I was going to wash dishes.
Yeah, and be mindful.
Okay, there's two ways to do it. One, I can do it grumbling about how my partner ought to be doing it because I cooked the dinner and it's going to be a miserable experience.
True that.
Or I can, you know, say, oh, here's a dish. Oh, look, it has this kind. It's going to need a little soap and it's going to need a little this. And okay, I got the water's hot. Oh, the water feels so nice. Here's the soap. What kind of a thing? I'm going to use this kind of a thing, and I'm going to I need a little bit more scrub, and I can really get into it, you know, and really be looking at what I'm doing in the present moment. And by the time I'm finished, it was almost an enjoyable experience. Your choice.
Okay, I just want to make sure I got this right. Meditation is mindfulness, but not all mindfulness is meditation.
Right. Meditation is simply a structured type of mindfulness.
Okay. We got to go, man.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I can't believe it. I know we didn't get to everything, but this is enough to make their head spin. It's good. We got it in. We got a lot of stuff, a lot of food for thought. They're going to have to rewind and wind.
So you might ask, like, how do you get started? And what I would tell you is this. People ask me that question all the time. So I decided I would write it all down in a 40-page ebook that's free. And I really mean it. It is free. No obligation. Go to my website and click on Is Meditation for Me? Download it. And all of the questions that you would want. What is it? Is it for me? How do you do it? What kind of the resources?
I love it.
What should I read? What are the good apps? It's all in there. Just download it. All the
answers. So there you go, folks. If you want to know how to get started, there you have it. All right. Now, besides that, is there anywhere else you want them to reach out and find you?
No, that's it. I made it very simple. Just one place. Now, I'm just about to finish. This is going to be exciting. I'm just about to finish. I've just been working on a self-assessment about how much do you know about mindfulness. And it's like a 10-question self-assessment. Everybody likes to take self-tests, right? So it's like one of those tests, and it scores it.
I like
and
that.
Then based on the score, I've got a lot of recommendations. So it'll be posted on my website probably within the next couple of days.
That's fun. All right, Bob. It's been a pleasure. I really appreciate that we figured this out for Let's Keep It Real. Yeah. And before it goes, is there anything else that we didn't get in that you want to get in? I think we got a lot in, but just in case, is there anything else you want to tell the Let's Keep It Real people?
I just want to let you know that we are all so much more than our thoughts.
Bob and I would really appreciate you liking it, rating it, sharing it with someone, subscribing. It means the world. I always forget to say that, but it really does make a difference. And you know what I'm going to say. Until next time, thanks, Bob, and toodles.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to share and subscribe if you enjoyed the show. And remember, keep spreading the positive.